You're listening to Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken on the Tangent Bound Network.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken.
This is going to be quite a ride.
Hey, Jim! Boom! That's a bad outfit! Boom!
I love you.
Me too, man. Hit me! My turn! Am I the meanest?
Sure
enough. Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
The Shogun of Harlem.
For what lies ahead, ready are you?
We're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Hey, Geeksters. I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters, to issue 92 of Geek Watch 1. And we're actually have a very special guest with us today. We're sitting here with Seth Breedlove from the Small Town Monsters.
Hi. Woo! Hello.
Hey.
Welcome back to the show.
I need to have a catchphrase or something, because that was incredibly lame. I need... hey!
We'll find you some intro music or something like you do in wrestling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We'll play it to the mic.
I'll come out with like really wet hair, all coiled up.
Then we'll be posting these on YouTube.
So, Kyle and Dawn, before we get into what you're here for, Seth, I mean, we've not had you on for, it's been almost a year now, hasn't it? Or at least 9 months.
Yeah, it's been a while, because I was not pregnant yet. You guys hadn't knocked me up yet.
Ah,
no, not
See,
yet.
That's why it's been so long since he's been on here. He's still blaming us.
That's right.
A lot of anger.
So we got plenty of stuff.
We watched dinner.
It's true. I remember it well.
So we're gonna
the rest, not so much.
So we're going to get to Small Town Monsters here in a couple of minutes, but because you have a lot of stuff going on. Your life has gone bananas in the last year.
Yeah, definitely. That's one word for it.
So before we get to that, Kylan, Dawn, what did you guys do this week?
Not too much.
Not too much.
We had our book posse meeting on Saturday, so we kind of did a download of what we had done at the reading festival with each other, sort of thing, and preparing for our next time around. And our next big release will actually be at the May Odd Mall. So so we're already gathering books for that, and we try to be fairly genre specific with the books that we have at Odd Mall. So we tend to have a lot of sci-fi, fantasy, and just generally odd books. And you know, we throw some in there for the vanilla crowd as well, the norms who come by. But mostly it's more of the geek-friendly variety of books that we have. So we're putting a lot of those together, and we should have probably two tables this time, I think.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, and I finally finished Uncharted 2, and I started – no, Uncharted 3.
Uncharted 3, yeah.
And I finally started the final chapter in Nathan Drake's story, Uncharted 4. And
so now he's really looking forward to the movie.
Oh my god. You know, Nathan Drake, you know, he's making some bad choices. I understand why he did what he did, but you know, Nathan, always be honest with the wife. That's what I'm saying. Always.
That's not just for Nathan, that's for everybody. She will find out.
So Uncharted is teaching you life lessons.
Oh my god. I'm like, you know what? If you're in extra legal work and you're not telling your wife about it and she thinks you're out, but she's gonna find out, just tell her.
Yeah,
you know,
that's just not even just for that work, in any instance, tell your wife.
Yeah just do it. Just do it. Yeah, you know, it's a great story, it's really engaging, but I just see the train wreck that's gonna happen. It's gonna be bad.
So are they making a Uncharted 4 then?
No, I'm playing Uncharted 4 now.
Oh, okay.
It's the final chapter.
It's the final chapter in Nathan's story, but the series is going to continue with two other characters that are in the series right now.
You know they'll bring him back anyway. That's the way video games are.
Oh, yeah.
No. Once Nathan's done, he's done.
What, are they killing him off at the game?
I don't know, but they said that there's a definite end.
I mean, in the geek world, that's the only way, and even then they still come back, is if you kill them.
Yeah, death is not permanent in the geek world.
Depending on the genre and the realm, death is not always permanent.
If that's anything true. Supernatural has taught us is that death is not permanent.
That's true.
Yeah.
Only if you're an angel and a demon.
Yeah. So, but
that's true. If you get staked properly, you're done.
Right.
So, actually, we had a couple of cool things happen. First one is Vicky. Why don't you tell them about the Brewpath? Summit County is doing some interesting stuff this week.
And it was too busy.
Yeah.
And muddy. And then after that, I went and got my passport for the year, so I can do my pub hop.
Yeah, Summit County Visitors Bureau is doing something with local microbreweries around here. Where they give you a passport at one of the breweries, and you have 14 different ones to hit throughout the year. And then if you get a stamp from each of them, you actually get a T-shirt, and then you get put in for a Akron Getaway grand prize.
Okay.
That's a hell of a lot easier than what the Winged Lizard does.
Yeah. Well, this one here, yeah, it's the we started with Ohio Brewing over in Highland Square. They actually have some pretty good food. Vicky tried one of their beers. You just try one beer at each of these places over the next, 11 months? So you got to drink 14 beers in 11 months.
Oh, yeah, that's difficult.
So,
I wanted to do it in a weekend. You wouldn't let me.
Yeah, Vicky thought she had to do it this weekend. She's like, we'll do it. No problem. But, no, the other one was...
Come on!
You wouldn't let me go back to another brewery, and then he wouldn't let me have a Sunday.
I'm just mean.
He was just mean.
But, actually, the other thing we did yesterday was, as Vicky said at the beginning, we actually kind of went Bigfooting, which is right up Seth's alley. It's Seth's fault that we did this.
Oh, sure.
Don't blame me. Don't blame me for this.
The place was packed.
Yeah, there was a lot more people there than I expected. You guys will
go missing 411 on one of these trails, and then it'll be my fault somehow.
But
well, I'll be running to it, not away from it.
Yeah. But we went up to the Oak Hill Trail in the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, which anybody who's listened to Seth on Sass What, they've actually recorded a couple shows up on the trail up there. So we went out to check it out. It was very muddy, but it was a beautiful day. You didn't even have to have a jacket. It was like 68, 70 degrees, which for February in Ohio.
There's no such thing as global warming.
Exactly.
No.
It's a chemtrails. That's what Bart and I came to the conclusion.
So, yeah, we walked the trail. It was fun. We did the short loop because we didn't know anything about it. Next time we're going to go up there and at like noon or so because they have like a 5-mile loop out there too.
Nice.
So you just out wander. And most of it's flat. There's not a whole lot of elevation change when you're actually on those trails. So it was nice.
No, it's actually like inside the park. There's more... boring trails, I think, but it's a blast to go there kind of late in the afternoon, early evening, and even be there after dark because of that fact. Like, you're not in danger of falling off a cliff back there, although there are some... The plateau trail can get a little dicey late at night, but for the most part, that's an easy trail to be out after dark on, and they don't close that trail until 11 p.m. So if you're caught back there after 11 p.m., you can get in trouble. But for the most part, most of the trails inside the park, you're supposed to be out of there by dusk. But on that side of the river with the Oak Hill Trail, you're allowed to be in there after dark. So that's why I always like that one. Plus, it's just kind of creepy.
Yeah. Oh, I could see that while we were there. The interesting thing was I found most of the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, the trails and stuff, are also one of the county metro parks, the state and county metro parks. Like Summit County has half the CVNP, the other half is in Cuyahoga County, and the Akron or Summit County metro parks and Cleveland's reservations are most of the trails in the national park are part of those. This one is not. This one's actually just straight a national park trail, and you can actually it feels different. It looks different because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So. But no, that was fun. We'll have to go back in. Actually, Kylan, since you have weekends off coming soon, maybe you guys can come for a walk once in a while.
Who knows? I don't know. I got
That would mean we'd have to stay in the outdoors for more than a few minutes. I don't really do that.
I got a lot of comics I gotta get caught up on too.
Well, yeah. So, but Dawn, you said you have a couple of news stories before we get into the Small Town Monsters.
I do. The first one is ratings story about the show Legion, which just recently started on FX. I'm sure you guys have caught it.
No, we didn't get a chance to catch it. It's on the list, though.
It's really cool. When we watched the premiere episode, we were part of these ratings because we watched it a couple days after it came out. And it visually, it's really awesome. It's a very confusing kind of story, especially at first, mm-hmm. because you're getting things, you know, it's set in a psych hospital. You're getting things from the main character's point of view that are either in his head or not, and they may be real, or he may be seeing things. And it's not until the very end that you realize kind of the X-Men connection to things. But anyway, the ratings weren't great when it first premiered, but the bigger ratings these days are the plus threes, which account for all the DVR watching and that kind of thing. And it basically doubled its audience when they looked at the plus three ratings. So like the first viewing was 1.6 million live viewers, and it rose to 3.27 million.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, so that was pretty big. But the interesting thing, though, is this has gotten like really good ratings like from critics. Across the board in terms of the way things are presented and the storyline and that. But it's still considered, this is considered the least watched drama premiere for FX in recent years.
Huh.
So it seems to be a big audience, but for FX, it's low. Like it's even lower than Taboo, and Taboo does not have a huge audience draw. I mean, it's, you know, Victorian and stuff like that. But yeah, so the thing is, it's, the likelihood of it getting canceled or not continuing or that at this point is pretty low because of the comic book factor.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's FX. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a cable channel. They're going to keep it on for a bit. Yeah. So,
well, that also gives it a chance to grow.
Exactly. And they did say in the first season, they're not going to, you know, have the direct ties or crossovers with X-Men. So it might be, it might take a little bit for kind of like the non-real geeks to get used to it. Mm-hmm. And realize the superhero elements of the show and really get into it that way. But yeah, so the other TV-related story I had was that Amazon has picked up the rights to produce a television anthology series on Philip K. Dick stories.
Nice. Well, they've already got one of his stories that's very popular and very strong for them in Man of the High Castle.
Yeah, exactly. They created an entire series for that one. But this is looking at his all of his short stories and anthology style, kind of like, you know, Twilight Zone and that, where you have a different different story each episode. And it's being helmed in part by actor Bryan Cranston.
Okay.
Who is executive producing it and will star in one episode. The writers for the episodes are Ronald Moore and Michael Diner, and they have worked on
Ronald Moore was Battlestar.
Justified and on Sci-Fi's Battlestar Galactica.
Wow,
cool.
So
well, that, it seems like
this is going to be. Mm-hmm.
Looks like this is starting, or they're trying to bring back the anthology style. Because remember, a couple months ago we heard about Tales from the Crypt trying to come back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's something that right. it's been a couple years since we've had any really big anthology shows like that. I mean, for a while in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a lot of those shows out there. They had the new Outer Limits still going and a bunch of these other ones that were like this. Right. And then it's like they've gone away for a while. Maybe they're trying to bring it back again.
Well, and interestingly, if you look at a few of the other shows on the creepy side of things, they haven't necessarily been anthologies in the sense of every episode is a new story, but the seasons have been anthologies. Like if you look at American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every season is a new storyline. It has some of the same actors, but it's a completely different setting and story and that kind of thing. And then you look at the ones that they've brought out from Creepypasta that they're going to be doing. They had one season already and they're going to be doing further seasons. And it's just, but it's very short. It's like four or five episodes.
Well, okay. And it's sort of like what they're doing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., having three different pods all within one season.
That's still the same characters and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah,
but people want shorter storylines, like shorter stories. And,
right.
And Black Mirror is another good example. That's right. Black Mirror. I think it's possible that the popularity of Black Mirror on Netflix now has brought some of these a little more into the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's a separate story every episode, and it's very techie and that kind
of
thing.
Right. Well, we've also noticed part of that with people wanting the shorter stories and stuff, you've noticed a larger trend of some of the networks, but not as much the networks, the more the cable networks going with more of what they called the European seasons, where it's only right. 10 to 12 episodes in a season and you're out.
Yeah, I mean, they you don't want the 20 episodes where they're basically drawing things out and mm-hmm. and giving you all these details that you don't really need, and you want yeah. it to get to the point.
Right.
You end up with junk filler episodes once in a while, and
right. mm-hmm.
just because they have to make exactly. it last. So
right.
right.
It's interesting just watching TV change and actually noticing the changes.
Right.
Yeah, I think because we're... we're so adept at paying attention to it at this point because we watch so many different shows and, mm-hmm. and networks is one of the things, you know, comparing the networks and how they're almost copying each other when it comes down to some things.
Yeah. So is that all you had on the news for the news front for this week?
I know Kylan has at least one, but I have one last quickie.
Okay.
About comics. The Comics Pro was this past week with, which is kind of like a very short convention, more like a 1 day kind of thing, where those who sell and distribute comics get together for reports and that kind of thing. Diamond, which is the essentially premier distribution company for comics, announced that 2016 saw an increase in overall comics and graphic novel sales over 2015.
That's a good
thing. Now, it was very small. It was less than a percent. It was like a third of a percent, but at least it was an increase.
Yeah.
And overall, though, interestingly, because so many people talk about independent stores going out of business and especially the niche ones like comic shops, according to Diamond's account numbers, the amount of people or establishments that actually ordered from Diamond over the past year had increased by 2.5%.
Nice.
So, you know, it may not be that there are more comic shops, but there are more places to get comics because there are more people actually buying them through Diamond and distributing them that way. So that's good news for us.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, because you have bookstores like, well, Borders and Books
yeah.
A Million now actually carries comics. They yeah. used to just be trades, but now they're...
Have you ever gone to one of those stores to try to buy a comic?
Yeah, I don't. And I mean,
you gotta search and try to find anything to find, because there's no rhyme or reason. They're not in any kind of order. No. They're just kind of sitting on the shelf.
No, yeah. exactly.
But the interesting thing is they do have a section where they have some alternate covers now. They have variant covers at the bookstores.
That's true. There's a whole separate rant to that one. another time.
We won't get into that one. What's your story, Kylan?
Actually, I got a couple. Well, while they're filming Aquaman right now in Hawaii, I believe, there may be another King of the Seven Seas filming a movie as well. There's been rumors that Marvel is seriously looking at a Namor movie with Donnie Yen as Prince Namor. Donnie Yen has stated that he wants to play Prince Namor.
Well, he's campaigning for
it. He's campaigning
yeah.
for it. I have no problem with that. I mean, he with the way the look they give Namor in the comics, Donnie Yen.
Well,
can fix
technically,
it,
he already works for the parent company.
That's true.
So. Yeah,
and if he doesn't mind walking around in a green and yellow Speedo, go for it. Yeah, you know?
he was a blind monk. He won't mind.
Yeah. So now this is like, I don't know if this is going to be Phase 3 or Phase 4 for Marvel. Right now, it's still just like at the rumor stage. But
interestingly, though, the rumor started because of production companies in Hawaii tweeting about it.
Right, exactly.
They tweeted about the fact that Aquaman was filming there and that they've also got interest from Marvel on doing Submariner.
Yeah.
In the same place. And it wasn't just one company. A couple of them actually tweeted or put this out on social media in some way. So it's not just like some obscure blog or something. This is actual production companies down there spreading this.
Yeah, actually, the tweet was from Real News Hawaii. And this was on February 15th. at 1:40 p.m. And it says there's buzz around the island that two rival productions could be swimming on our waters. Aquaman and Submariner, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that means there has been interest and someone has, you know, put the feelers out for locationing.
So what's the chances, if they do decide they want to do this, of possibly in the second Infinity War movie you actually get to the Submariner and no one knows it until you actually get to the movie?
Right. It's possible.
It is possible.
That would be, it would not be out of the realm of what Marvel has done before.
No, that's true. It depends how they want to do it, too, because, I mean, Submariner's not a good guy, and it would be kind of awesome for him to have an origin story movie, because all you usually get is the heroes.
Right. Yeah. And Namor is strictly concerned with Atlantis. He really doesn't care about the surface. And, you know, you guys, Thanos can come and clear you guys out. He doesn't care as long as they don't touch the seas. And that's so pretty much where he is.
It would be like a completely underwater movie.
It could, yeah.
We could see that.
Would be kind of cool. Because, yeah. I mean, you know, Aquaman's not going to be completely underwater.
No. But, you know, the corporate bad guy in the Marvel comics is Roxxon, the oil company. And, you know, they can mess up too.
Yep. Big oil spill and Submariner's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so I'm excited. You know, it'll be fun to see what they do with this. So keeping my eyes out for that. And also, now, I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but I'm just going to touch on this. This is actually a story from last month. So this was actually on Forbes.com's website. News about the Uncharted movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you don't like Uncharted at all.
No, we haven't talked about it.
Yeah, I don't talk about it. You're not going to take it or leave it. So it looks like it's going to happen. The script is done.
We know that.
And so now the question is about cast. Some people are saying Nathan Fillion. Truth is, I can't see it being Nathan Fillion.
It's 10 years too late for Nathan Fillion.
Right, right.
Because it has to be a younger character.
And Nathan Drake is in his early to mid 30s.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, it seems like any geek icon type character guy that they're trying to cast now, everybody throws Nathan Fillion's name at it now. It's like 10 years ago he would have played all those characters. Now he needs to play the older ones.
if you look at Nathan Drake though, he looks like Nathan Fillion. I think that's why this one gets a lot of play.
He does. I mean, especially in the fourth game, I'm looking, I'm like, oh my gosh.
I think they did that on purpose. Wanting to eventually get to a movie and do it, but it just took too long to get to a movie.
It did. So, you know, and they're hoping that this movie will be the first really good video game movie because Assassin's Creed just didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, they've
had other
ones that were very successful video game movies. It's just Assassin's Creed was the most recent one, other than Resident Evil. And Resident Evil, I think, did okay in the theaters. I mean, it did what they expected, and that was about it.
Well, and you have Tomb Raider, which they're already filming the reboot of that.
And that's the fourth Tomb Raider movie. So I'd say that's pretty successful.
They're hoping for that to kind of pick up too, especially with the whole female heroes thing being a much bigger thing over the past couple years.
Right. Because especially with Resident Evil Ending, which was the one that had a female lead.
And the other major one was...
It's going to be interesting. There are female characters in Uncharted. I will say that there is one that would be considered a female co-lead. But
it depends where they've gone with it then.
Yeah, so I think...
I think it's just interesting that this article was in Forbes.
Yeah.
Well, Forbes has been covering a lot more of this type of stuff.
Well, yeah, but just the fact that this movie and this franchise has enough play to actually get into a magazine that focuses on big business and productions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of a big deal for a video game franchise.
Well, that's what it is. Geek franchises, are now the big business out there.
Right.
Well, I think people were surprised by how big Uncharted was because beyond the four games, Actually, five games because I believe there was a mini game that was for the PSP. There's been a board a tabletop board game. There was also a motion comic as well. And so there,
it snuck in there though. Like it was under the radar for the longest time.
It did, and then all of a sudden, talk about the movie comes out, and then I mean, I'll tell you, even now, I have people come to me. And who are Uncharted fans that I didn't know. And, you know,
people who really don't play video games much and they're like, but I love Uncharted.
It's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, when Uncharted first came out, wasn't that about the same time as they were restarting the Tomb Raider series too?
Roughly.
Yeah.
So that's why what happened was all the big news and the big eyes were looking at Tomb Raider, being that was the juggernaut in that genre of games for years. What's Tomb Raider doing? And Uncharted slips underneath the radar then. Until now, where it's actually gotten enough ground that everybody's like, oh, wait, what's this?
Yeah, exactly.
And the character, Nathan Drake, is not your typical video game hero. Right. He's just your average guy, you know, and he's kind of funny, kind of self-deprecating.
He's the modern-day Indiana Jones.
Exactly.
I can bet you anything that a lot of people who play the game are into Indiana Jones.
Like, they are,
they're not usually video game players. But because there's been no decent Indiana Jones out there,
right?
That's why they get into it,
right? Yeah. And I will tell you that, and I'm not one to necessarily go back and replay a game. I mean, a game has to be really, really good for me to do that. I will go back and replay this entire series because it is, although they're four separate stories, it's one big story. Mm-hmm. And
you know, when you're done with reading all the comics and playing all the
I'm done with all the books and the comics and I have to squeeze that in there again too. Keeping the eyes and ears open, and hopefully we'll see more about this as the year progresses. Well,
we'll definitely be sharing who's cast as soon as it happens.
Oh, yeah. Before we get too far away, I think it's we need to actually bring in our guest here. What do you guys think?
Yep, absolutely.
Let's do it.
Seth, we've had you on a couple times before with your other movie projects, but the big one that you had a movie just come out that somehow we didn't get you on for it. So how did Boggy Creek go?
It went well, I think. I mean, it's weird. Like, I could talk extremely frankly about it, or I can be, you know, my typical interview self. I would say it went extremely well for us, maybe not as well of a launch as I would have hoped off of the strength of the name. But I think what we didn't account for in picking a release date for Boggy Creek was the election and the fact that it was going to steal any sort of press we would typically have gotten was kind of muted because of the election. So, pretty much we launched on November 11th. The election was what, like November 7th? I mean, it was just a few days before the, it was crazy. When we released it, it launched fairly well on Amazon and I guess what I'm comparing it to at this point is Beast of Voyhall, because Beast of Voyhall was so huge on Amazon and DVD. So, at this point, Beast of Voyhall has been viewed like 200,000 plus times on Amazon alone. And when you factor in the fact that the movie played on television in upstate New York five times and it's done, you know, multiple screenings, I mean, it's got to be close to like 300,000, 400,000 people have seen that movie at this point. So that's kind of our bar, you know, like to judge the other releases on. So Boggy underperformed in a way, but I really think in 2017, it's almost going to be like a new release for us because the film festival circuit is kind of just getting going. So we've already been accepted into, I think, six festivals. We just played the ICE Film Fest down in Dayton yesterday. We've got Horror Hound Weekends coming up. They're going to play the movie. We've got Midwest Weird Fest, Miami Independent Film Festival, a couple other ones. And the movie's out for submission to a ton of festivals. especially in comparison with the other movies. So I think word of mouth gets going on it, it'll do really well. And it's, again, like, it wasn't a disappointing release for us in comparison with the other movies. It's just like, when you think of Boggy Creek, that was supposed to be our big, you know, Jurassic Park, small town movie. And I think it just because of coming out up against the, you know, the election and that stuff, it definitely didn't do quite what I would have hoped for, which is, this is literally the first time I've said this on a show. So, but, you know, I mean, I'm speaking from also a filmmaker and producer place more so than, like, you know, indie filmmaker guy. That's my producer hat being worn rather than my, like, storyteller / director hat. It's a weird thing because I produce the movies and I direct the movies. And if anyone, you know, you guys probably know this, but, like, producers and directors are sometimes at odds with each other because it's, while they have similar goals, it's not the exact same. And so it's weird at times. I feel like I'm fighting with myself because I'm always keenly aware of, like, what my budget is and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the producer stuff. But then there's, like, the director side of me that's like, well, I got to get this shot and we want to film with this and we want to do this. And, you know, so it's bizarre. But it's not a disappointment as far as the release goes. It was just, I guess it was under what we expected initially, but I think, again, like, I really think it's going to be almost like a new release for us in 2017, and it's going to go out to Netflix in the next couple months for submission, so hopefully it gets picked up by Netflix. If not, it doesn't really matter, because we're also going to try to target iTunes and Google Play. We're trying to expand the amount of avenues that our movies are available in. So Beast of Whitehall is out to Google Play and iTunes right now, and Boggy will follow suit soon after, and then Mothman should be up in those same venues pretty soon. So we're focused more on digital in 2017 and moving forward than, you know, physical screenings and library presentations and the kind of stuff we've done for the last couple of years. That stuff was great, and it's awesome to interact with our audience in that way. But we're finding that the real audience and growth for us is through digital means, you know, rather than, you know, Bigfoot conferences and stuff like that. That was a long winded answer.
Oh, that's fine. But no, I know we watched it. Vicky and I watched it again last night, and mm-hmm. this does have a totally kind of different feel than the way you approached the other two, Minerva and Whitehall. Because those two, it seemed like you kind of focused on one story and fleshed that out and got that story out of this one occurrence that happened. And then you touch on some of the other things, but this was more of a just documentary on Falk, Arkansas in general. I mean, you talked about it. It does flesh out the story of the movie, the original Boggy Creek movie. But other than that, you have a lot of stories from people that are actually other sightings and things that have happened in the area, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to see that our movies are going to be one of two things. They're either going to be short films like Beast of Whitehall, or they're going to be a feature like Boggy Creek Monster. Minerva was a one-off for us as far as, like, the way we told the story and the way the movie played out. It was a one-off. Some of that has to do with the fact that other people were involved in making it that I don't see eye to eye with creatively. And in the end, I'm not thrilled with the way Minerva turned out. I'd love to at some point do Minerva again, you know, in the way that I would like to see it done. But yeah, I totally agree with you. And that was very conscious. Like the way we told the Boggy Creek Monster story was very consciously done. We knew that we wanted a look at not just like one sighting location, but kind of the entire gamut of everything that's gone on with the Falk Monster, dating all the way back to the 1800s. So that was our goal. I would say, I think it's actually kind of like the big brother of Beast of Whitehall. Beast of Whitehall was similar. It's just that Whitehall is so much shorter. It would have been like if Boggy solely focused on, you know, like two of those sighting stories rather than what it ended up being, which is many different sightings. And, you know, it's also our first movie that's told from someone's specific perspective. So you're seeing the movie through Lyle's perspective. And I was really happy with the way we made that work. And I just watched the movie yesterday, actually, for the first time in a few months, so I was picking it apart. But that tends to be what I do when I watch our stuff anyway. I think it's a kind of incredible that in 73 minutes we did manage to boil down this entire history of one region and their local monster. I hope, you know, like it's a tightrope we walk because we don't want to alienate people who aren't into cryptozoology and aren't into Bigfoot or monsters or that kind of thing. And so we try to keep our movies at a good pace that won't lose that audience. You know, the people who are just kind of there for fun to learn about this, you know, what they might see as a silly story. So we try to strike a balance. I know a lot of Bigfooters in particular would prefer Boggy Creek Monster to be like a 3-hour long in-depth dissection of, like, you know, the Bigfoot phenomenon in Arkansas. And that's not really what we're going for ever. But at the same time, you know, we want to do a very thorough look at the film. So that's why you have, it's kind of split into these little chunks, especially towards the end of the second half, where you start seeing pieces of the story coming together and you start to see the physical characteristics of the creature being fleshed out and the little side stories like the three-toed track and all that kind of thing. I mean, it's kind of amazing. We managed to get all the major pieces of that story into the movie, you know, from the Crabtree, the Smoky Crabtree stories to the Cersei house story and the three-toed tracks and all through the lens of Lyle Blackburn's perspective and kind of the research he's put into it. So, I'm glad it worked for you guys, especially you, Ken, because, like, you were a pretty big fan of Minerva.
Yeah.
And this was not Minerva. In fact, it's kind of diametrically opposed in some ways to the way Minerva played out.
Yeah, but you could still see it was a small town monster because you still went into some of the history of the area and things other than just a Bigfoot occurrence happened here.
Sure. Yeah, and I still tried to keep it I keep using the word skeptical in interviews and it scares me because I don't want people to label me a skeptic because then I'm like the guy who's trying to debunk stuff, which isn't the case. But it's definitely told kind of open, you know, like I think even Lyle a couple times in the movie talks about how there might not be an answer to what's going on down there, you know, whether or not there is a Bigfoot or not. Obviously Lyle's more on the positive side of the fence as there's definitely a Bigfoot than I am, but he's not 100% sure. So I do think we did our best to still keep it kind of open so skeptical people, you know, don't feel like they're being bombarded with some sort of hard evidence for the existence of Bigfoot. That isn't really what this is.
Well, actually, getting into that a little bit, since we saw the movie last night, we saw you actually got something strange happened that you actually put into the film to you guys. Why don't you give us that story?
Yeah, that was something we decided to do kind of not last minute, but we had decided to do that later in the game. We have typically avoided putting in like our own evidence or weird happenings, but it's something we always get asked about. Like, do you guys ever have anything, you know, crazy happen to you while you're filming? And, you know, we walked a tightrope. So let me tell what the story is first. We were setting up to shoot an interview with one of our witnesses, and while we were setting up, we were in this location where multiple people have had sightings, and it's also a location that was used in the original film, the 1972 The Legend of Boggy Creek Horror film. And so this is a place with a lot of history of bizarre activity, and we're setting up, and we had just got the microphone, the boom mic running. Brandon's catching some scratch audio and stuff, and we heard this weird howl come from far off, and he caught it on the recording. Now, what you don't see in the movie, and I've only talked about it a little bit in interviews, but there were a couple weird things that preceded it and then followed it after that happened. Before we recorded that, I had been walking down the hill by myself to the bottom of the hill where we ended up shooting, and the rest of the crew was maybe about 300 yards up this hill around a bend. I mean, I couldn't see them from where I was, and I'm not like Mr. Monster Hunter and I'm not some sort of fearless leader when I'm out in the field. But if I have a camera in my hand and I'm working on a movie, I don't get scared. I don't know why that is. Like those shots in the movie where I'm leaning out over the front of the boat with the gimbal filming the river. There were alligators submerging right in front of me, and I never, it never affected me. I was just, you know, I had the camera in my hand, I was getting the shot. So, but for some reason, walking down the hill alone, I got this really eerie kind of feeling, like I don't want to be alone right now. And there was this unmistakable sound of flies buzzing in the right, like on my right, inside the underbrush. And of course, like the undergrowth in Arkansas is so thick down near the swamps, you couldn't see a foot into the tree line to my right, you know. But I could hear these flies buzzing, and I could smell something, you know, like this really pungent, strong odor. And it had me unnerved enough that I actually went back up and got Brandon, and Brandon came back down with me, so I wasn't down there alone. And the other weird thing, so that was unusual, but the other weird thing that happened was we were hearing throughout the interview, we were hearing what sounded like pebbles or rocks being thrown into the water, right behind where Lyle and Doyle are standing. So there was, and even at the end of that clip where you hear the howl in the distance, you hear what sounds like a rock hit the water. Now, I could have like boosted the audio that's in the film so you could hear a little better, you know, what that howl is. But I don't know, maybe it's probably stupid on my part not to do that, but I don't want to make it into something if it isn't something. So I kind of just left it in there the way we recorded it. You know, I boosted the audio a little bit, but I didn't want to really boost that howl. I want people to listen to it and try to figure out for themselves if that's a owl or a coyote or if it's a monster, you know. So I can tell you it didn't, when we were recording it, it did not sound like a coyote or an owl, both of which we had heard while we were down there. Not down in that location, but while we were down on filming, we had heard them in other locations. This sounded really human-like, and it was coming from, you know, an area where there wouldn't be people. So that was kind of why we went ahead and stuck it in the film. I think it's interesting, and I like the idea that people are playing that scene back, trying to figure out what it is for themselves, and that's what I'm hearing. Like, a lot of people have talked about how they play that scene back and they stick their ear up to the TV. So that's our story. That's the weirdest thing that we've caught, you know, while filming that we could include in one of the movies. Although we did have some cool stuff happen last weekend while we were filming Mothman.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll have to get some more on that here in a couple minutes. But one thing you were saying, how you hanging over the edge and getting the one thing I've noticed all your movies is the nature side of it. You do some beautiful B-roll stuff where it's just footage of like the where you were saying where you're hanging over the boat with the camera on a gimbal and things like that. Now, how much actual like nature footage just of scenery and stuff did you actually get for this? I know you said you had a lot of extra footage on this one.
We have when we came home, we had 20 to man, I want to say 25 hours in that neighborhood, 25 to 30 hours worth of B-roll. You know, and obviously in the film, in the 73-minute film, there's very little in comparison to what we have on file. I could make a whole nother movie, you know, using some of this stuff. And, you know, that footage going down the river, you know, looking out the front of the boat and all that, that's some of the best kind of water footage that I've seen, you know, like I guess it was the lighting or something. It's just incredibly eerie looking, and obviously the gimbal plays a big part in that, and being able to film with the A7S II, which is this amazing low light camera. Like, a lot of that stuff comes into play. But I'm really proud of the work we've done with our B-roll on the last three movies, starting with Whitehall and leading all the way up to to Mothman, because it's really difficult, actually, to try to, you don't want to just shoot a freaking tree branch or a shot of a hill or something and then stick it in the movie. You know, you want to have there be a purpose for why you're using the B-roll you are. So it's, you know, Zach has brought a lot to the film, to our last two films, especially. You're going to see it a lot with Mothman. You know, with Boggy, I think Zach was still finding his footing with us, and him and I were just working together for the first time. And Zach is our director of photography, I should say, Zach Palmisano. And he's one of my oldest friends. So we brought him back for Mothman, and you know, like he's playing around a lot with what he's doing visually now on this B-roll stuff. So yeah, we have in the neighborhood of 25 to 30 hours worth of extra B-roll. We also have a lot of unedited interview we can still work with, and I do still plan on revisiting Boggy and Beast of Whitehall for director's cuts in the next couple years. I mean, Boggy's an easy one. You know, there's tons of stuff we can do with Boggy Creek still, just from uncut interviews and adding in some information and things like that. I'm assuming in the next couple of years you'll probably see like an hour and a half, hour and 40 minute director's cut.
Okay. So, but you've mentioned it a couple times, and you're already filming it, even though the Kickstarter is still going. You got your next film is actually The Mothman.
Yeah, the Mothman of Point Pleasant is the fourth film. It was actually filming all the way back last September. We shot footage in Point Pleasant that's actually in the Kickstarter video and the trailer even, that I shot with my own camera. And then we started shooting at the beginning or early December. We pretty much paid for this movie out of pocket as far as like production goes. So the Kickstarter, more than anything, is to fund the post-production side of things, and then the fifth movie, Invasion, which is coming later in 2017. So, yeah, The Mothman of Point Pleasant is the fourth film, and The Mothman is a story I love, and it's something I've been familiar with for a long time. In fact, I have said that I think the Mothman Prophecies movie that came out back in like 2002 might be responsible for the fact that I'm into this kind of stuff in the first place, because my sister was a huge fan of that movie, and she bought the Mothman Prophecies book and gave it to me. And I know that was one of the first kind of weird, you know, paranormal themed things I'd ever read. And so this is something I've wanted to do for a long time. It's something that the crew is really into, probably more so than like Bigfoot. You know, I know Zach and I had seen the Mothman Prophecies in theaters together a few times, and he's much more open to like aliens and this kind of like weird ultra, you know, interdimensional or possible, you know, government conspiracy stuff than he is into like cryptozoology. And this story goes in a lot of weird directions. And so this one we've been extremely excited to visit.
Cool. Now we know from when you told us before that Mothman, you hadn't even planned on doing it when you talked, or you didn't have a firm plan when you talked to us last time, but now obviously you do. You had said that the problem with Mothman was trying to find a unique or a new way to actually look at this story. Obviously you found that.
Yeah. Well, I had talked to Lauren Coleman when we did Minerva Monster Day. I had to drive him to the airport, and he spent the entire drive telling me why I should not make a Mothman movie. And so I got done with that drive, and I was like, well, maybe he's right. You know, like he was really convincing as far as like, you don't want to spend your entire time making a movie trying to figure out what your take on it is going to be, because that's going to take away from simply telling the story. And so I've tried to avoid that, honestly. And initially, I went down to Point Pleasant to talk to Jeff Wamsley back in late November. Jeff is the curator of the world's only Mothman Museum. So there's actually a Mothman Museum in Point Pleasant. I highly recommend anyone going there and checking it out. It's really cool. But Jeff had kind of convinced me that there's a lot more to this story that hasn't been explored yet. And he also offered some things that haven't been shown elsewhere or heard elsewhere. And at the end of all of this, when we get to the point where the movie's coming out, I'm pretty sure that we'll have more original witnesses represented in our film in one place than have been in any of the other Mothman-centric docs out there. So I'm pretty excited about that fact. We're working on, you know, having a lot of different archival interviews and things like that inside the movie as well. So it's going to be more, you know, people have been asking me if it's going to be like Boggy or Whitehall or Minerva. And I think it's going to be somewhere in between Whitehall and Boggy, because I don't think it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be quite as personal as Boggy, because Boggy was told from a first person perspective by Lyle. But this is going to be, I think, a very like emotional movie, and our B-roll and the interviews were shot in a very specific manner because of that fact. You know, like the bridge collapse, the Silver Bridge collapse that took 46 lives back in 1967 is going to be a part of the movie. And because of that, it's kind of informed everything we've done on the movie. So it's, you know, Boggy had a lot of moving shots and stuff like that. And this movie is very locked down. Not that there aren't going to be drone. It isn't going to be drone footage and some gimbal stuff. We'll have that in there. But Boggy was kind of energetic. You know, we wanted it to be this like forward moving, you know, let's always have that camera moving in the B-roll kind of stuff. And this one is less like peppy and more of a somber kind of look at everything that happened. Having said that, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to affect the entertainment value. I think it's going to be a really interesting movie for people to watch. It's this chronological kind of look at all the crazy stuff that happened in Point Pleasant from 1966 to 67. And, you know, it's going to have some introductions for people to major players in the story that they probably haven't seen done in other filmed Mothman entertainment, which sounds crazy because, like, filmed Mothman entertainment, how many stories can there be or movies can there be about the Mothman? But there's at least like 50. I guarantee there's at least 50 different television docs, news stories, and filmed, you know, full length movies about the Mothman story. So yeah, I was definitely nervous coming into it, you know, that we might not have our own unique kind of take on this, but I think that was pretty quickly put to rest early on, you know, when I kind of established that what I want to do is this in-depth kind of exploration of that 13-month span of time.
So I know Whitehall took what, about 2 weeks to film it totally when you were up in New York?
Well, I mean, I went to Whitehall in July of 2015 and we shot all of the movie in 4 days. So okay. We shot all of our interviews, all of the B-roll. But I came back to Ohio, got in a gigantic disagreement with the guys that helped film it. They sabotaged the B-roll. There's no easy way to put that. That's essentially what happened. They trashed the B-roll, or not the B-roll, but the interviews. I had the B-roll. So all the interviews were missing. So I actually went back to Whitehall and refilmed all of the interviews for Beast of Whitehall in a day and a half, plus all the drone footage. So the movie essentially was filmed in about 5 days. Okay. And it cost right around $500.
And then you went bigger with Boggy Creek. You said that one was what, 8 to 10 days of actual time in Falk?
It was actually only, honestly, it was only 5 full days of filming. But you got to, you know, when I say 5 full days, I'm talking 5 12 to 14 hour days.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include what we would do in the evening when we would come back to the hotel and start to go over B-roll and, you know, Aaron was editing together behind the scenes and all that. So yeah, I would say between both of those movies, it was probably about 5 days. The major difference is Beast of Whitehall was a crew of basically just myself and my dad and Brandon, because even the B-roll that I had shot the first time I'd gone down for Whitehall was shot by me, you know, exclusively by me with my camera.
Well, how long? How many days have you had shooting so far on Point Pleasant now on Mothman? It sounds like you're going back and forth a lot. Well, it's nice that it's actually close enough that you can do that, but.
In theory, it seems like it's nice. It turns out, I feel like we've spent more than we needed to if we had done like a straight shot, you know, like almost like a boggy situation where we just went to Whitehall or just went to Point Pleasant, shot the movie in like 4 or 5 days. It's really interesting, like wearing my producer hat to try and figure out like what is the best, most cost effective way to do this. But with Point Pleasant, I would say we have gone back and forth and shot exclusively where we're going down and shooting for an entire day. I think we're at 3 days.
Oh, okay. I thought it was now, more than that.
Well, I mean, it just depends on, you know, like there was a day last September where I got footage. So you could count that day, which would put it to 4. There was a day. So I would say the first time I went down and shot with Zach was back in December. We shot over the course of a day and got a bunch of B-roll. And then we went back at the beginning of January with a crew and we shot a bunch of interviews in one setting. And I think we shot 5 interviews in one day, which is insane for us. So we got 5 interviews and then we shot one more interview the next day. So we actually stayed down there. So that would put you at 3 days. And then we just filmed again. So 4 days shooting is what, you know, if you want to consider basically the entire movie has been filmed in about 4 days. Our budget on this one, since I'm such a fan of divulging what we're spending on movies, I think we just on the rental side of things, you know, like just renting equipment on this one has cost probably about $1,800, and it did not have to cost that much. Our problem was we had to rent the equipment every single time for 3 to 4 days because of the fact that we would, you know, you get the equipment on this day, that's considered a rental day, and we're shooting over a weekend, so you have to keep the equipment for Saturday and Sunday, and then you return on Monday. So every single time we were running the equipment for 3 or 4 days. So it was more than it needs to be. And I'm glad it's like one of those lessons you learn the hard way. I'm glad I learned it on this movie because, you know, we start filming Invasion on Chestnut Ridge in May. So I'll know a little better how to handle and approach that movie because it's going to be a similar situation since the Chestnut Ridge is only, you know, a few hours drive from here. We'll be kind of doing the same kind of back and forth thing, but I can at least approach the budget from a better place.
Okay.
I'm really divulging all the indie filmmaking secrets on this one.
Yeah, but that people find that fascinating usually. It's stuff you don't normally see.
Right. That's the stuff I always like, so.
I don't know. Kyle and Dawn, did you have anything before we move on to Invasion?
No, actually, that was what I wanted to ask about was the next one.
Yeah, okay. Well, we know Small Town Monsters, you guys have focused on small town urban legends of like Bigfoots, and now you actually have the Mothman that's coming out. Actually, before we move on, what's your estimated time for premiere for Mothman?
Mothman, we're shooting for June 2nd as the release date. That is, it's potentially going to get pushed back maybe a month. I haven't decided yet. Our big problem, you know how I was talking about getting our films on like iTunes and Google Play. The problem is from the time that we submit a movie to our aggregator, who has been distributor, although I'm not ecstatic with how that's been going on Whitehall. From the time we submit a movie to our aggregator to the time it goes up in those venues, it can take 2 months. What that would translate to with Mothman is that we would need the movie done by end of March. So I gotta, you know, we're trying to figure out if we should, you know, extend the release date back a little further so it can come out in all these places at once. You know, like my plan right now, even if the movie does get pushed back a month, it would just be pushed back, for DVD and our digital avenues. Kickstarter backers should still be able to get the movie on June 2nd. So, but at present, the planned release date is June 2nd. I just am trying to weigh my business options as far as like when the movie can come out and all these other avenues, you know?
Okay. But moving on to the next one, you're actually moving out of the realm of cryptids and into ufology a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, the next one is called Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. And I can tell you it's not going to be anything like the other four movies in a lot of ways. It's going to be a little bit of our experimental film. I think we're going to kind of start in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, with the Kecksburg UFO crash that took place in 1965. And Kecksburg will be our small town. It's going to be the focus as far as, like, you know, the local legends and the local history will be more about Kecksburg than any one town. But the movie's going to focus on that Chestnut Ridge region, which is actually a 100-mile stretch of land in Pennsylvania. So it's not going to be that different, though, from what we did with Whitehall, you know, where Beast of Whitehall isn't just about the town of Whitehall, but it's also about the Adirondacks in general. So it's going to be similar to what we did with that. It's going to focus on the Kecksburg crash during the bookends, and then the central section of the movie is going to be kind of a collection of bizarre historical stories out of the Chestnut Ridge that'll run the gamut from, like, Thunderbird sightings to missing people to really weird and unusual Bigfoot sightings, like Bigfoot's holding glowing spears and things like this. So there's a lot of weird history in that area that we're going to kind of delve into. And I don't think just from what I'm looking at right now, as far as our preliminary research is going, I don't think it's going to feel like anything that's coming before it, other than maybe Beast of Whitehall. It might be probably a little more in the vein of Beast of Whitehall. And I think, again, like Beast of Whitehall, it'll probably be one of our shorter films. So, you know, 40, 45 minutes is kind of what I'm shooting for.
Okay. Since this actually happened back in the 60s, has any of the official government-style documents come out about what they called this or anything? Has anything, like, been declassified?
Stan Gordon, who's kind of the go-to guy when it comes to Kecksburg, has done a ton of research into this. There are documents, and he's uncovered a lot of information relating to it. But there's also a lot of alternate theories. I know the Pennsylvania director of MUFON has his own, you know, alternate take on what happened other than a UFO crash. It's an alien UFO crash. He has an alternate theory. So it's one of those stories that has a thousand different, you know, cooks in the kitchen when it comes to takes on what happened. It's often referred to as the Roswell of the East Coast, in that, you know, it's been investigated by so many different people, and so many different people have kind of tried to put their own stamp on it. So there have been official government documents relating to it, but, you know, The common theory is that a UFO crashed. Now, when I say UFO, you can read into that alien craft, or you can read into that a satellite or some, you know, weird military prototype, something. You know, there's all kinds of theories on what crashed. But it crashed in the woods and was seen by multiple people, multiple residents of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, when it crashed. And it was later taken through town on government trucks, whatever the object was, and purportedly taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base here in Ohio, where, you know, coincidentally or not, the Roswell crash was also supposedly taken. So, but again, like, the Kecksburg story has been documented so much that I really, my plan is to use that as a jumping off point for kind of the weird, more bizarre, you know, cryptid and paranormal stories that have gone on the Chestnut Ridge. It's the fact is, like, Mothman, Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, and whatever comes afterward are part of a trilogy we're calling High Strangeness. So the first trilogy was called Bigfoot, and that was Minerva, Whitehall, Boggy. And the second trilogy, which is Mothman, Invasion, and whatever comes after, that's High Strangeness. So these are stories that don't necessarily fit within the parameters of any one subject or you know, subject of study or phenomena. So while there's definitely going to be ufology involved in Invasion, it isn't strictly a ufology movie. It's also going to have bizarre other stories, you know, cryptid stories and things like that. And we're relying heavily on the input of investigators from Pennsylvania and witnesses, obviously, as well, but heavily on the research of guys like Stephen Gordon.
So when do you think you'll ever get out to Skinwalker Ranch and do that one?
Did someone say something about this on a show, and that's why I keep getting asked this?
It's
the whole, like, high strangeness.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's what we're looking to do next. I haven't said that anywhere else, but, like, I mean, that's, like, our dream at this point.
I haven't heard any other interviews.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought maybe like Sam had said something on Into the Fray or something, because I've been talking to Sam about wanting to do this for a while, and he's like, really, like, you guys got to do that next. So it's definitely where we're looking, and it also, we'd love to do that also because of the fact that it's out west, so, you know, geographically it's a completely different kind of look from the other movies. And, you know, as awesome as it's been to do Minerva and Whitehall and Mothman, they're all East Coast films, and once we do Invasion, you know, you're going to be at four out of five of our movies that'll be East Coast based. So I'd like to get out west. So yeah, Skinwalker is where we're kind of looking as far as research goes right now. The big thing with Skinwalker is I don't have a direct way to tie it to a small town. That's one problem. And the other problem is I'm not even sure it's legal to film on the ranch right now. So, good question, though.
So, guys, did you have any other questions for Seth here?
I honestly, like, every question I could think of, he answered it. And then there's a big download in my head. All I know is that I'm more about the aliens and the cryptids. So I'm excited to see what this is going to bear, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like, we've talked at length about getting outside of Bigfoot. Boy, that sounded dirty. We've talked a lot about getting away from just doing, you know, focusing on Bigfoot. So right. Mothman was inevitable for us. And then wherever we go from there, you know, that's kind of a great gateway for us to get outside of, because it's still kind of a cryptid case, but it opens the door to the weirder, you know, subjects and also ufology. So we're moving away from strictly Bigfoot. I'm sure we're going back to that at some point, because I still haven't made my Momo movie. But we, you know, Roswell has always been something we've talked about. Aurora, Texas has always been something we've talked about. And you know, this is kind of, we're just kind of letting the series go in the way it organically goes, and hopefully we can, you know, take it as far as it'll go. I mean, we've had amazing support from our audience and supporters, and the people that have backed the Kickstarters are the reason we're able to continue making movies. So, you know, wherever we go from Invasion, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if it'll be Skinwalker or not, but that is definitely something we're talking about.
Do you see something maybe like Unsolved American Legends, like D.B. Cooper?
Yeah. I don't know why my voice cracked like that when you said it. It was like my heart broke at that moment or something. But yeah, like I don't know. D.B. Cooper probably wouldn't work, but you know, we've definitely talked about covering, you know, legendary kind of serial killers and things like that, you know, like cases that become local legends. The thing that springs to mind is like Son of Sam or the Phantom Killer down in Texarkana, that kind of thing. So there's, you know, there's an endless array of stories we can cover under right. The Small Town Monsters banner beyond just cryptids and the paranormal. You know,
for this area, there's never really been a great documentary on the Torso murders.
Exactly.
Right. I agree. Yeah, that would be an awesome one, too.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'd love to do something like that. And that would give me an excuse to fly Brian Michael Bendis in.
Exactly.
And interview him.
Dude!
You know what the funny thing is? I was actually just, what was it, last summer?
Last year
I was cast as one of the roles in the film that's actually based on the Torso murders that's coming out.
Yeah.
One that was filmed here in Cleveland.
Yeah.
What was that one called?
Kingsbury Run.
Yeah, Kingsbury Run.
Kingsbury Run, yeah.
That should be interesting.
If you get that interview with Bendis, I would so sit in. I would like sit in the corner. I'd be quiet. I'll bring you water. You know, I'm serious.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know if that ever happens. But yeah, I mean, that's something we'd definitely like to cover. I mean, I'd also like to go back in the direction of doing stories that haven't been covered, you know, ad nauseum, because like Skinwalker's great, but it's been covered. Mothman's great. It's been covered. You know, I mean, every story we've done since Minerva has been covered extensively elsewhere.
Right.
So I'd love to get back to something like Minerva, and Invasion's kind of like that, but Kexburg has been covered all over the place too. So that's kind of one of the reasons that we're not solely focusing on the Kexburg story. We're going to focus a little wider. I got into this because of being able to investigate the Minerva case for myself, find information that had never been talked about elsewhere. And that was all kind of drawing off of my experience as a reporter. And I haven't got to, I haven't really been able to utilize that side of my experience since Minerva. You know, like we're pretty much at this point, we've been just kind of drawing off of the help of other people, you know, like other investigators, because a story like Mothman has been investigated so much that most of the information is already out there. So I'd love to be able to go back to doing a story where we're kind of responsible for uncovering, you know, the bulk of the story.
Is there a chance for we got local around here, we have like Rogues Hollow. Is there any decent stories you think that have come out of there maybe that you could cover? Because Rogues Hollow had some interesting history stuff in there, I know, outside of Doylestown, Ohio.
Yeah, Rogues Hollow, though, is mostly like ghosts and you know, it was like a cool bandit hideout and stuff. But, I mean, that specific story, I don't know that it would be, you know, something I would cover. I would definitely look into doing a short film about something like the River Styx monster. You know, like we're going to have to take a look at this eventually, but there's a door here where we could go down the path of making short films, like short shorts, you know, like 15 minute long shorts, 10, 15 minute long shorts about local monsters. It's just figuring out how to fund that. And, you know, how to do it in a way that would be, you know, feasible for us financially and be something cool for our viewers. But I definitely would like to start doing something like that. You know, like next on March 2nd, we're going to start doing like a live show. And basically it's going to be like a way for we're going to record it live on Facebook Live and YouTube Live. And the audience can interact with us through there and ask us questions and stuff. But that's going to be like our way of testing the waters as far as starting to branch out beyond just making films, you know? So, and obviously in 2018, when we get to the book, it'll be even more of a multimedia thing, but I think down the road, if it can continue to grow and sustain itself, what I would like to do for sure is make shorts that would come out throughout the year, you know, like 3 or 4 short films a year, in addition to the normal projects we're doing. And maybe other guys could direct those or, you know, something to where I could have other filmmakers come in and make their own small town monsters film and we could release those or something. That's definitely something I've wanted to do for a while.
Well, cool. We've mentioned it a couple times that how Kickstarter basically funds all these, and you actually did something kind of cool, or Kickstarter did something kind of cool with you this time when you actually put Invasion and Mothman up on Kickstarter. Now, how long did it take to get fully funded?
Less than 2 hours. We were 110% funded in about an hour and 51 minutes.
Nice. And you're on almost 200% already.
Yeah. The goal was 9,500, and we had over 10,000 by the Kickstarter launched around 7, and by almost 9, it was at over 10,000. So, you know, it's fantastic. It's like the most encouraging thing that's happened to us as a company in the last year, I thought. You know, because you go, we're at the end of the day, it's an independent business, just like any independent business, just like the bookshop down the street, the comic book store down the street, you know, whatever. We operate the same way that any small company does, that any small independent business does. It's just that our product is film. So we go through a lot of ups and downs, and especially in 2016, there were a lot of ups and downs. And you come out of the year looking at, you know, where you're at, and sometimes you can feel a little disappointed in it. And to go from that into a Kickstarter making its goal in less than 2 hours was like, it was exactly the shot in the arm we needed, you know. And there was a lot of drama. There's a lot of drama being connected to the Bigfoot community. That's one of the reasons we're kind of stepping away from it. So something like this was everything that we needed. I think it was, as a crew, as a team, it was encouraging for every single person involved in this to have what happened on that Kickstarter happen.
Fantastic. Now, it was interesting because I was actually listening to Sass What with Mark and Andy and you when you guys actually did this. You were actually on live on the radio when this happened.
Yeah, we did. We asked the local radio station that broadcasts Sass What if we could come record in the studio. You know, and originally it was just going to be all we were asking them if we could do was to come, you know, shoot our Facebook Live video in their studio, and they said sure. But then the guy that came down to let us in was like, well, let's just go live on the radio and do it on the radio too. So yeah, we were live on air on 97.1 FM and through their website, and then we were live on our Facebook account as well, the Small Town Monsters Facebook page. And it was crazy because we ended up with like 3,000 views just on the Facebook Live video. We had hundreds of questions and comments coming in. We had people popping in and out of the room constantly. We had listeners on, you know, on the radio station and all that stuff. So that was kind of what opened my eyes to how cool something like that live kind of experience for our viewers can be. And I don't think the Kickstarter would have hit, you know, over 100% of its funding in less than 2 hours without doing that. I think that was almost like doing a PBS pledge drive or something. You know, like people were just excited to be a part of it.
The Kickstarter is still going for, as of recording, is 13 days. So it's going to have about a week left when this posts. Now that you're well over 200, or you expect it to be over 200% by the time it's done, but what kind of stuff has been opened up because of reaching like the stretch goals and going as far as you have? What options has that opened up more?
We're doing the first stretch goal was the Minerva or the Invasion on Chestnut Ridge mini poster, which is like the teaser poster. We're going to do that as an 11x17. Print, and we'll sign it. So like myself and Brandon and hopefully the rest of the crew, I can get them to come over and sign it. And so you're going to get a signed mini poster. And then we're also doing the next one that's going to open up when it hits 20,000 is the Mothman of Point Pleasant soundtrack by Brandon. And this is by far his best music, like out of all the movies. If you've seen the teaser trailer or you watched the Kickstarter video, like you'll hear there's just a very specific tone he's going with on the soundtrack to this movie. So that's going to be a free stretch reward. You'll get a soundtrack version of the a CD version of the soundtrack. And then next up will be a Small Town Monsters bumper sticker. And I think we have to hit like 25 or 24 to get that. So we've got a long way to go before we hit that. And then we have one final reward. And I did this. I set this like as far off as you could get just because it's pricey for us to add. But I thought it was so cool to add if we can. So if by some miracle we hit like 28,000, people will get a Mothman of Point Pleasant minifigure designed by the Brian Borgman, who does the Kaiju Chaos games.
Yeah, we've seen him at Con of the Cop a couple times.
Yeah, so he's doing he has a Mothman figure. He's going to do like a special variant paint job on it and stuff. And Brian also did the Crypt Orb, the Mothman Crypt Orb that's going to be one of the rewards in the campaign already. It's not even a stretch reward, it's just in the campaign. And those are like little, I don't know if you guys have seen them, but they're like almost like the, do you guys remember Mad Balls from the 80s?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember
this
it.
This is basically that, but a cryptid. So it's like the Mothman's face, but a little rubber ball. And, and that's actually one of the rewards for the Kickstarter campaign too. So Brian's, very involved in this one.
Yeah, I know Brian's work is awesome, because for Con of the Cob, actually for Andy there, he made a Cornthulu mini, and he's made a Sasquatch for him. The one that Andy uses for the Oddmoor Northwest.
Right. Cool. Yeah. And he did Brian did a Minerva Monster minifigure as well that he sold at Minerva Monster Day last year.
Oh, cool. So, as we're getting ready to wrap this up a little bit, Kylan Dawn, did you have anything else for him?
No, that was a lot of info.
That was a lot. but that's great, though.
Absolutely.
It's just me. Oh, I almost said that's just me information dumping all over you, but that just sounds. And then I said it anyway. So.
So, Vicky, I'm
sick. I'm sick, and I'm on cold medicine. So this is what happens.
Well, Seth, how can people get a hold of you and follow you to keep an eye on what's going on with all this?
Right now, the best way to do it is through our Facebook page, facebook.com/SML Town Monsters. We're also on Twitter and Instagram, and we do have a website, smalltownmonsters.com. All the DVDs are available through shop.smalltownmonsters.com, or they can stream through Amazon. Beast of Whitehall is still free through Amazon Prime and Vimeo on demand. If you want to get like downloadable copies of the movie, you can buy them off Vimeo on demand. But pretty soon, like I said, pretty soon we should be available kind of everywhere. So iTunes, Google Play, all that kind of stuff. Vudu, we're looking into PlayStation Store, Xbox, all that stuff. We're going to try to really expand the amount of places we're available in 2017.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. This is, I think, your third time on here, which I think is the most we've had of any guest in the years we've been doing this.
Yeah.
So, but like I said, anytime
you're in the Hall of Fame.
You're welcome.
Well, anything you got coming up that you need to make an announcement or something, let us know. You're welcome on the show anytime, or if you just want to come and hang out, geek out with us.
Thanks, man. Adrian keeps wanting to get to the meetups too, but I have yet to have free time when you guys were doing it. So at some point we need to do it. She asked me almost every single time you guys are doing a meetup if we're going.
Well, that's the last Monday of every month. So
yeah,
there you go. Schedule it.
Exactly. Just put on the schedule and say, this is the day, this is happening this day.
I will tell her she has to put it in the calendar.
So Kylan, don't you have anything else for before we wrap up the show today?
No, this was great. Thanks.
No, I'm good.
Vicky, you have anything else? You got it?
We've been dumped on enough.
Yeah.
You can't take it anymore.
No. No mas.
Well, geeksters, as we tell you every time, you always find us online anywhere. Just search GeekWatch1, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everything. Miss Dawn has us there. We're geekwatch1.com. Or you can always go to send us an email at geekwatch1@gmail.com. We're also available on the Tangent Bound and Weeby Geeks networks. And then, other than that, for Seth and for Kylan and for Miss Dawn and for Miss Vicky and myself, just remember,
no matter where you go, there you are.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.